Greetings, everybody. Welcome to episode 22 of Mandatory Marvel and DC, the show that likes to take a look back at the biggest and best storylines from the big two of comics. I'm your host, Max Byrne, and I hope you'll continue to join me each and every episode as we cover these classic moments that have stood the test of time and crossed over into popular culture. Now, for episode 22, I am deeply, deeply honoured to welcome onto the show somebody I'm a huge fan of. Not only is he the news editor and a reviewer for DCComicsNews.com, he's also the host of the fantastic Classic Comics show, which, of course, is found right here on the Comics in Motion Network. He's a multi-instrumentalist, an all-round renaissance man. It's the Prince of Prog Rock and North Carolina's finest export since Ric Flair. It is, of course, Matthew B. Lloyd. Matt, how are you, sir?
I am excellent, sir. What an intro. What an intro. That was great. Wow. Thank you so much. Well, you got all the points. That was awesome. Prog Rock Prince. That was the great, and the multi-instrumentalist even. That was awesome. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Well, I always try to do a good intro for the guests. You know, I always peak too early, but can only go downhill from here. But I always try to at least give the guests a good build up. But how are you, sir? How are things over in your side of the world?
Pretty good. I mean, you know, the vaccine is in place here in North Carolina, and people are getting it. And Some of the I'm a restaurant manager, and the business doesn't seem to be affected much by it anymore. So we're in good shape as far as that's concerned. My daughter finally went back to school in person today, for the first time since almost a year ago. So as far as those things are going, we're doing good, and it's we've had too much rain. We haven't seen the arc go by yet, but it's drying up a little bit today, and it's supposed to be dry the next couple of days. But it feels more like somewhere else than North Carolina with all the rain we've had. But that's how it is. So we're getting by with that.
Oh, great stuff! Great stuff. Well, it sounds like you're in good spirits, and it sounds like it's a nice place to be. So that's very good to hear. We're kind of getting there ourselves here. The schools go back next week finally, after having been shut since prior to Christmas. So that's good to finally get the kids back in and everything. And the vaccine's all getting rolled out here. So I think, you know, in the next few months we should sort of revert back to something resembling normal, whatever that is. I can barely remember. It's been that long.
We're coming up almost on it. It was St. Patrick's Day last year when our state went into shelter at home and the lockdown order here for the state. So it's almost to a year at this point. And it's hard to believe it's been a year. And in some ways, it feels like it's been 5 years, and in other ways, it seems like how could it be that long? But it's surprising. We're coming up on the anniversary. I'm kind of shocked in some ways.
I know. I was thinking to myself, I can't believe it's been nearly a year since this first really took hold in the UK. So it's been the craziest year of our lives, I think, to be honest with you. I mean, hopefully we'll never see the likes again, but who knows, eh?
We don't. I would agree. You know, there are certain things in people's lives that they remember. I'm sure everybody that lived through, you know, something like World War II or World War I, where they have multiple years that were just nuts and crazy. Yeah. But for people in our generation, this is, I think, is the craziest thing we've experienced. On a worldwide level.
It is, yeah. We're sort of living through history now, aren't we? You know, this is something that will be in the history books and taught in schools in 100, 200 years from now, and we're living right in it. So it's kind of weird, really, to be living in a historical sort of hugely significant part of the human history.
My daughter said something about that. This is back last year in April or May or something when she was home from college. She said something about, you know, we're going to look back at this and say, oh, that was during COVID. And like everyone will be like, oh, what was it like then? And some people won't. It was like she likened it to 9/11, like, you know, pre 9/11 world and, you know, pre COVID world and that kind of thing. And I think she was spot on with that, because we're going to think about the world differently, you know, post COVID, as we certainly did after 9/11. We thought about everything differently, and I think it's a great analogy. So that's exactly what we're looking at. History.
We are history in the making. Well, speaking of history in the making, I want to ask you, before we move on to our topic, and you're obviously the picker of said topic, being my esteemed guest for the week. I want to ask you, obviously, as I said at the top of the show, you're the host of the Classic Comics podcast, which is obviously found, of course, on this network we're on right now, the Comics in Motion Network. It's a great show. I'm a huge fan. And we were speaking before we went on air about your episode that's dropped today, where you're interviewing the owner and proprietor of your local comic shop about EC Comics. For those of you who haven't, obviously, maybe experienced the show yet, where did the idea come from, and what can people expect when they tune in?
Well, the idea came from a couple guest appearances I did to start with. First, Steve J. Ray had me on Superheroes to Dummies,
yes,
talking about The Fly. And then Tony from Indie Comics Spotlight had me on his show talking about Pep Comics, Archie Comics in the Golden Age, and the character of the Shield. And I think what happened was I was talking about those particular characters that were pretty well unknown to those guys, and they noticed I had a lot of other type of comic knowledge that, you know, maybe other folks didn't. And yeah, after the first couple of those, Tony reached out to me because we were going to do we planned to do another episode on The Spirit, which I did with him.
Yes.
That came out just a few weeks before my first episode. And he said, look, I talked to Dave Harkes at, you know, Comics in Motion, and he thought it'd be great if you wanted to do a classic comic show, because he said nobody else really covers that in the podcast network. And he said, you know, of course, you know, you don't have to, but if you'd like to, you know, we'd love to have you. And, you know, you alternate on Mondays with Superheroes for Dummies, and, you know, I think it'd be great. So I thought about it, and, you know, I thought, oh my gosh, how much more free time can I tie up with something that I like to do?
Yeah.
If I'm not busy enough as it is with, yeah, you know, reviews and stuff and having a family. But, you know, quite honestly, you know, I'm become pretty good at multitasking, and I helped make the bed earlier while we were talking. So I'm pretty good at multitasking and stuff. So, and planning and stuff with stuff like that. So oh my gosh, it's like, it's fun. It's like writing a research paper every couple weeks on a comic book character, a title, a creator that you really like. So that's always fun. I'm always researching stuff. You know, I have a master's in art history, so I'm always like the historical aspects of things. So,
yeah,
you know, when I see a character introduced in a comic today, I don't want to just know about that. I want to look back and see, where did they come from, what they've already been through, those kind of things. So, you know, I put my thinking cap on. And I thought, well, how am I going to do this? I don't know if I'm going to be able to have a guest every week, especially if not everybody – if the whole point of the show is kind of classic comics and that's not something everyone is well-versed in.
Yeah.
I thought, how am I going to find people for that? I thought, well, maybe with my schedule, it might be tough to always have a guest and have a guest scheduled. Then it has to be at a particular time, whereas – if it's just me, I can, you know, do it early in the morning, late at night. I can do it whenever I have, you know, a couple hours to do it. So I thought I would do that. And then I had to have an idea of what that might look like. So I went on the Comics in Motion Network and I listened to Mike Burton's Star Wars comics and canon. And he does a great job of,
yeah,
covering all these Star Wars comics. And he reads them to you. It's like story time, you know, it's like, yay, story time with Mike, Star Wars story time with Mike. And, yeah, you know, I lay down on the sofa and put it on and had my phone sitting on my chest and just listened to him go through it. And he talked about – he didn't just read the stories. He talked about the other instances of this planet or that planet or this character, where this character has been seen in canon before, and or if it's just a brand new idea or whatever. And I thought, okay, I could easily sit there and go through – some comics and just talk about what I like about them, as well as maybe, you know, cover some of the story aspects. So after hearing his show, I had an idea of what it might look like. And I told Tony, yeah, I'll do it. And I started getting ideas. And so what I cover, essentially, I am looking at comics that came out before the Silver Age. So
yes,
somewhere in the middle 50s, you know, anything before that is fair game to me. And I've kind of focused it on that because that's kind of where I don't want to cross over too much with other people. There's no sense in having me do, you know, a character that Steve is going to cover on Superheroes or Dummies, even though we both did a Captain America. We're both going to have some Captain America and Batman episodes, but they're kind of slightly different, you know. But I didn't want to cross over too much unless it was, you know, a specific idea that made a lot of sense. So I thought, I love all these old comics anyways. That's one of the things that really grabbed me about comics as a kid. And I talk about that in the first episode, is why classic comics, you know, getting that Overstreet comic book price guide when I was 11 years old on my birthday, and, you know, really understanding the history of comics and how comics were different back then and different characters that you didn't see anymore, what happened to them? But they were published for 10, 15, 20 years, and now they're gone. You know, what happened to that? So I just decided to focus on that that aspect of the history of comics, and I've just picked – sometimes I pick comic titles or characters that I just really like, others that I'm just really interested in knowing more about personally for my own gratification, and hopefully I make it interesting for the listeners. And the show that came out today is about EC Comics, and I got to have the owner of my local comic shop, like you mentioned, on, and that guy is just a wealth of information. If people listen to my show and think, I know stuff about old comics, you ain't seen nothing until you hear John talk about his personal experiences with some of these creators that he was, you know, personal friends with over the years, and, you know, the things he's seen and things he's heard and people he's talked to. He should have a, you know, a whole series of books for the history of comics and his own personal experiences, because they're just phenomenal. So that's if you just like to hear old stories, just listen to that episode to hear John talk, because you ask him a question, 30 minutes later the answer is still going, because it's such a great there's so much to his answer. He's so complete with it that I had very little to do on that show. That was a very easy show to do.
Yeah. No, it's great. It's a great listen. As is every episode, it really is. Like you said, if people are interested in learning about a specific wonderful time period and some characters, like you say, that were incredibly sort of relevant at the time and really present, and then, you know, for whatever reason, have sort of slipped away from the public consciousness. It's a great show. It really is. So I'd highly recommend it. Well, if you're listening on this, you'll be picking up that show too. So by all means, do get a listen. It's a fantastic show. So I look forward to hearing what you've got next up your sleeve for us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's going to be a character called Miss Fury, actually.
All right.
I don't know if you've ever heard of Miss Fury, but she was a strip character in the 40s, and actually had her Sunday pages reprinted by Timely Comics for a number of years, and then she slipped into comic book limbo, and then she got a little bit of a renaissance a few years ago with Dynamite in a few series. So I'm going to cover sort of most of all of that.
Oh, superb. That sounds good. I look forward to hearing that. And speaking about characters from sort of a bygone time, this is quite apropos for what we're going to discuss tonight, albeit this is a much more modern release for said character. And as listeners of the show will know, the subject matter is chosen by the guests. So, Matt, do enlighten us. What have you selected for us?
I have selected Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I know you and I are talking about one volume, but it's actually split into two volumes. So we're covering the second volume, which is more of the direct story with Cap and such, whereas and the Winter Soldier is the first volume is sort of more of an introduction to the concept, and getting that it comes out of that series restarting with a new number one, with a new creative team and everything. So, but where the stuff we're covering, the second volume, is kind of where it really gets going, and sort of the meat of the story, if you will.
It is indeed. Yeah. For anyone out there who wants to check it out, this is Captain America, volume 5, issues 8-9 and 11-14, published in 2005, written by Ed Brubaker and art by Steve Epting. Now, Matt, this particular one, as we just said, comes out in 2005. Was this one that you bought off the rack as it was coming out in 05, or is it one you've come to at a slightly later date? I myself didn't pick this up till 2012, so I didn't pick this up off the rack. But what's your own story with it?
Well, the first part of the story is that when I was a little kid, maybe 7, 8, 9, up till 13 or 14, yeah. Captain America was without a doubt my favorite character.
Yeah.
That was one of the first comics I ever bought consistently, and every month I got it. It was on my pull list at my comic shop, along with the Avengers and Superman and something else. She had to have five books to start a list back then. And but Captain America was – and I mean I read Captain America regularly up until monthly up until I think I went to college maybe. So maybe after part of college, maybe like 1994. So I probably have a good 12, 13-year run of Captain America uninterrupted from the 80s to the 90s. But as I got older, I didn't care so much for the stories they were doing. I had to make some decisions. You know, you can't spend, $200 a month on comics every month, or especially when you're young, because you'll be living in a box with the comics as opposed to a domicile. So I dropped a lot of books, Captain America ended up being one of them. And I looked at the Heroes Are Born Captain America when it came out in like 97, 98, 99, whenever that was. And I read a couple issues. And actually, even though it wasn't classic Cap, I thought they were pretty well written by James Robinson. I was like, oh, okay. But I didn't really stick with it because it ended and everybody came back. And I think I got a couple of the Heroes Return issues of Captain America. And then that was kind of right along the time our first child was born. I had to make another, financial decision about comics. And I didn't pick up another Captain America comic until Brubaker killed him in issue 25 of this volume. And that was kind of what got me to find this. I had, of course, I would read news and stuff online about what was going on with the character and such. And then, he's going to be killed. He's killed this. Oh my gosh. Oh no. So I thought, this is probably going to be some crap storyline that's going to last for a few issues and it'll come back and, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to check it out, So I read that one issue and thought it was really well written and it was different from what I thought. And it wasn't what I expected. And so I was like, man, this is pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So what's this whole Civil War thing going on? Why was Cap killed at all? What's this whole – why is he arrested to begin with to where Crossbones is even able to get a shot at him coming down the courthouse steps,
Yeah.
And I thought, okay. So I got the Civil War trade and read that. I thought, wow, that was good. And I thought, so what else is going on? And I decided I would start getting the Captain America book. Even though he was dead, I was like, this is going to be interesting. They're not ending the comic. It's going to keep going.
Yeah.
I thought that's a really interesting concept. I want to see that. And that run of Brubaker, the entire Brubaker run, obviously is fantastic, phenomenal. But the way he's able to keep the book going with the supporting characters of Sharon, the Falcon, Winter Soldier / Bucky, and Black Widow, to me was just amazing. He dialed into everything I like about great comics with that run. And I thought it was the best – it was the best comic I was reading for the next few years, quite honestly. Better than anything I thought DC was putting out. And I'm a DC guy, as most people will be able to figure out. But it was just fantastic. So I thought, well, I got to go back and start getting the first part of this run, this Brubaker run.
Yeah.
So I went to – I don't know where I got it. I don't know if I went to the – I might have gone to a bookstore and bought it or something like that. Or I might have got it on Amazon. I don't know. But I was like, I got to get this. And, of course, I started at the beginning with the first two Winter Soldier volumes. And, I mean, I read those. I was enraptured. I was stuck reading and just – I could not believe how good it was. I should have known based on what I had already read with the current stuff. But then here I am a few years back with this series when it's relaunching in the Volume 5. And holy smokes, it's just so good. I was just pulled right in. And like I said, that Captain America run by Brubaker was the best comics being put out by the big two at that time.
Yeah. All right. I can't agree more with you, really. It is a phenomenal book. And rereading it in the past week for probably the first time in maybe 4 or 5 years since I last picked it up, you forget, obviously, I've not read it for a few years, just how good it truly is. One thing I did want to ask you about, actually, right at the top, is it's something that this subject often rears its head on this show for some reason. It must be the choice of subject matter always seems to pertain to it. And obviously, we're not really spoiling it for people, because I think anyone listening to the show would know who the Winter Soldier is. And obviously, this is Bucky, James Buchanan Barnes, Cap's World War II comrade-in-arms, who was obviously missing, presumed dead, from the events of WW2. And then, obviously, in this run, Brubaker brings him back as the Winter Soldier. Now, characters being killed off in comic books and then being brought back from the dead is such a well-worn road to travel. It's been done to death. And from my own personal view, it's got to the point now wherever they kill off a major character in Marvel or DC, it kind of means nothing to me, because I just think they'll be back. You know, a few years down the road or a few months down the road, whoever it is they've killed off and however they've killed them off, even in the most sort of cut and dry graphic way, they'll still find a way to bring them back if they want to do so. So where do you sit, and not specifically related to Bucky, but in general with comic book characters being killed off and brought back from the dead? Do you like it, or do you think it's been done so much that it has indeed lost a bit of impact when someone gets killed?
I would say for just like a standard answer, not being specific, it's pretty much bullshit. I think I am like you. I am just so tired of it. You know, instead of trying to have a gimmick, because that's all it is. It's a gimmick. Yeah. It's a story that just, you know, tell a good story. You have the capability to tell good stories. I know this because I've read them. So tell a good story. Don't tell a dumb story. Yeah. And most of the time it's just crap. I'll be honest. I am the perfect generation to have been reading comics with the death of Superman and when Batman had his back broken by Bane. And both of those stories by the end bored me. So much to the point that with Batman, I just stopped reading all the Batman comics at some point when Jean-Paul Valley was running around as Batman. I was like, I can't take this anymore. This is just when Bruce comes back, I'll jump back on. But really what I did was I waited when Dick came in and got the costume.
Yeah.
I picked that up because that to me was interesting and different.
Yeah.
Because Dick Grayson's a great character. I like the character. It makes perfect sense. And I was really excited to read that. So the prodigal aspect of Nightfall and all that is a great section of Nightfall. I was pretty much bored by most of that. And with Superman, it was like, can't we just bring him back? I mean, you know, and then when he comes back, he's got the mullet. So it's like, oh, gosh, you know, so you can't, you know, people out there can't see me, but I've never had long hair. I've got a short buzz cut and I can't stand that long hair. He looked so silly, I thought. So yeah, I'm right with you. So and so you would reasonably believe that I would think bringing Bucky back was a load of crap. Like some people don't like that they brought Barry Allen back. But to me, Brubaker does it in a way that is not. Steve, J. Ray, a nickel for this one. Cosmic bollocks.
Yeah.
He doesn't bring it back in a ridiculous way. He brings him back in the same pseudoscience that's used for the whole super soldier formula that Cap is on, that is you know, created with. The same pseudoscience brings Bucky back. And he has an interesting and different story to tell with him. He doesn't bring him back, you know, he brings him back with a chance of redemption as well. It's not just like he's back as a villain, which would have really been a downturn if he stayed a villain.
Yeah.
But there's just a whole wealth of stories that are generated by the fact that he brought him back. Additionally, with a situation like this, I am a sucker for redemption stories. I am a sucker for people coming back and rekindling friendships and relationships that seemed dead, either because one person was an asshole or one person was dead. And this does that so beautifully. It's so character focused. The whole storyline between Sharon, Steve, Sam, Nick Fury, even, and Bucky, And Natasha, she's in this later on, she comes in later on in the stuff, but it's hard to separate, not to include her in it just because she's in it later on. And of course, in the way they adapt this idea to the films, she is a main player. She's more of the, I guess, the Sharon role than Sharon's Harley in the movie. But Yeah, they just the characters and the relationships and the way they interact. It's just beautiful, and that's what really draws me in about comics and great storytelling. You know, I've said it before other places. You know, the big explosions and stuff. I don't always need that. I don't need the big events and stuff. Mm-hmm. I like the characters and the interpersonal relationships, and that's what really grabs me the most about this story. I think it's because it's about people. You don't even have to know who Captain America is, but you can read this and see the way that the relationships are written between the characters, that there's a lot of history with all these characters, but there's a great deal of love and affection there between the characters that Brubaker is sort of working through with each of the different relationships, just to be able to bring them all together finally by and it's not even at the end of this particular volume. That all comes later on. But this brings up the whole introduction and sets the stage for the rest of, what he's going to do in his run.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think, for me, it works bringing him back. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of this endless cycle of death and being reborn. But I think with a character like this, like you said, because they brought him back in such a wildly different way from the way the character was depicted pre his death in inverted commas back, I think it was in, was it about late 60s, 68, something like that, the last time you saw him on the comic book page, at least, when they sort of, I guess they, when they first brought Cap out of the ice in the Avengers, would he then have sort of retconned Bucky's death or something to say that he was killed then too, something like that, I can't remember now.
Yeah, it's Avengers number 4.
Yeah.
I think that's 1963-64. I'd have to look at it. I've got a copy. I've got the comic, actually. I could have one of the prizes in my collection is a Avengers number 4. But it's like 63-64, and when they pull him out of the water, the Avengers pull Cap out. The first thing he yells is, Bucky! Because the last thing he remembers, they show, is they're on the drone plane, and it exploded, and Bucky, he believes Bucky's dead, obviously, and he is, and but Cap survives. So, so he hasn't been seen in a he's only ever seen in flashbacks in after his last Golden Age appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so they certainly kept him dead for quite some time, at least, before they decided to pull the trigger on bringing him back. But it is a great way to bring you back, because such a proud and patriotic American character, World War II hero, is reborn as this Soviet assassin, this Soviet killing machine. I mean, what a complete 180 to obviously pivot the character and present him in this new way. I mean, obviously we learned there's, he's not suddenly sort of switched his allegiance. There's obviously a whole backstory which we'll get into as to why he's ended up like that. But it's such a clever twist. I suppose it works as well to serve Cap's story, doesn't it? Because the way I look at it is Cap is this, he's this sort of embodiment of perfection, is he? He's the perfect human specimen. He never does the wrong thing. He's always, beyond sort of reproach for his decision making. He is a Mr. Perfect, for want of a better word. But Bucky's death in World War II was like his one failure in life, wasn't it? And sort of everything he's accomplished since he came out of the ice in, like you said, in Avengers number 4, that's the one thing that until this point anyway, was hanging over his head, wasn't it? That in his eyes, he let Bucky die, and spent all those years grieving and, I guess, trying to move on. And then, all of a sudden, when you're trying to move on and get over that failure, my God, that person's still alive. Here they are. But A, they don't know who you are because they've been brainwashed, and they're your sort of direct physical adversary in this. I mean, that's a great sort of toolbox for Brubaker to play with, isn't it? To sort of give Cap such great storyline.
Well, the thing is, it shows just how focused Brubaker is on telling a story that is character-driven as opposed to event or exterior-driven. Sure, it's a character he's opposed to, but the real story is, what does Steve do in order to get through the conflict? How is he going to decide how to approach it? And you're exactly right. This is a theme that was used in Captain America comic books since he came out of the ice. Was he's a man out of time. He feels guilt over Bucky's death, and sometimes he loses contact with his own identity. He has the questions who he is, and does he believe in what America is doing now. Yeah. And the Captain America comics, when they're done right, always focus on, you know, the ideals of freedom and liberty and those kind of things, as opposed to being a, an enforcer for the American government, which is what other characters are shown to do later on at different times that Cap gives up the role or whatever. You know, John Walker, the super patriot, or whatever. That version of Captain America is the one I think of first, but it happens in other cases too, I believe. But yeah, it's just what you said is exactly right. It's the perfect situation to really explore Steve Rogers' own guilt and ability to work through a thought process of how do you make the right decision and really present a situation where both arguments have validity, you know?
Yeah.
And it, I wrote down, I made some notes obviously before we're going to talk. And one of the things I wrote down was we see that Cap is unsure of himself and he's questioning if he's making the right decision. And, you know, for those of you that, I mean, if you haven't read it, I'm going to spoil a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, go for it. Spoil away. It's fine.
Cap, you know, Bucky comes back. He's the Winter Soldier. He's an assassin, like you said, from the Soviets. And, you know, Sharon and Nick Fury think he's got to be killed. He's got to be taken out, you know. And if you're not willing to do it, Cap, we will.
Yeah.
And Cap's like, I can't do that to my friend. He's my best friend from, you know, 70 years ago. I can't do that to him.
Yeah.
I believe, I have faith that there is still a vestige of the Bucky Barnes I knew inside, and I'm going to find it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring him back. I can't kill him. But the whole thing is those are the two sides. But what's so great is we actually see Cap go through the motion, not the motions, but go through the process of trying to figure out what to do. How do I do that? He even says at one point, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is nothing left. And if we don't stop him, he's just going to be more deaths of innocence, you know, because there's a whole big explosion and that kills bunches of people in Philadelphia at the beginning of the book that, or I think it actually was the end of the previous volume. And this volume picks up immediately after that. And that's the
aftermath. Yeah, he's in the aftermath of it. Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of how this story launches. So
yeah.
He's got that decision to make. Do you kill this one person that seems to be beyond saving in order to save how many more lives? Or do you let him go on with the hope that you can bring him back and save him? But that's kind of Captain America, though. And that's what's so good is that it presents all the gray areas. It presents Cap questioning and working through it, but at the same time, it never loses the fact that that's exactly what Cap would do. He would try to save him.
Yeah. Oh, of course he would. Yeah. I mean, even at one point, he even seems at the start when he's presented with this footage that sort of shows him in plain sight, look, this is Bucky Barnes here we're dealing with. And he even comes face to face him, doesn't he, in that the aftermath of that attack in Philadelphia. But he still seems to be in this huge state of denial, doesn't he? I mean, publicly at least, he refuses to publicly acknowledge in front of Fury and Sharon that it is Bucky. He's like saying, I can't remember his exact words, but he's almost saying, well, you know, footage can be doctored, you know, it might not. Kind of thing. He's really sort of refusing to almost deny it. It's kind of like that denial stage of grief, isn't it?
It is. And if I remember correctly, after he talks to them, he totally loses his shit. I pulled up the book.
Yeah.
He does. And he totally loses shit and starts breaking stuff in the and wherever they are. They're in some kind of room with together, and he loses his shit and starts breaking stuff. It was just totally unlike Cap. And Sharon's like, Steve, are you all right?
Yeah.
And then he kind of gets his composure and says, you know, okay, well, I'm in. I'll do what I need to do. But the whole time, you know, he's holding back that he's gonna find that opening to try to save him before he has to.
Yeah.
make the final decision.
Exactly. You always get a sense that that would be the ultimate final last resort, wouldn't it? When all else fails, then he'll put him down. But you always get the sense he's gonna try and at least find if the man is still there that he used to know. It's good actually. You mentioned that opening sequence because I think that is. That whole opening sequence of the immediate aftermath of the Philadelphia attack kind of just shows Cap in a nutshell. It shows how great a handle Brubaker had on Cap, in my opinion, because in there you see everything he's about. He's saving those innocent people. He's taking the time to lecture AIM villains while he's dealing with, he's even lecturing them about their mindset. And then he's set upon by sort of half a dozen MODOK squad members and just calmly disposes of them like it's nothing. He even says, right, let's go, let's get started, with a half smile.
Oh, yeah.
With a half smile on his face. Yeah.
I wrote that down because I thought it was hilarious. I wrote down, there's even some humorous moments, and I put the quotes, all right, let's go. It reminded me of the scene in the elevator from the movie,
yes.
The Winter Soldier. Even though they're not related whatsoever, it's the same sense of getting the character right, you know, and just, okay, you know. What he says, you know, anybody want to get out before we get started?
Exactly.
It's perfect. It made me think, I'm sorry, I'm geeking up a little bit and getting kind of, the emotions are running high. This is so good that it's one of those few comics that gets me all emotional and stuff. It's so good.
Yeah, it is. That whole, like I said, though, that whole few pages, that is Captain America, isn't it? It shows what a peerless fighter he is. It shows, you know, that, you know, hand-to-hand fighting, he's as good as it gets in the Marvel Universe. You know, he's, you know, most people, when sort of stared down by half a dozen, you know, enhanced killing squad members, would be like, oh Christ, but he's like, right, okay, let's get it done, and just demolishes them all, armed only with a shield. And like I said, he's there to save those children, and you know, it dispenses moral virtues as well. It just shows that Brubaker just had, for me at least, in the, you'll know more because you're more educated about the history of Captain America than I am by far, but for me, I think Brubaker gets the character and is probably the definitive, at least the definitive modern era Captain America writer, I would say.
I would say without a doubt, Brubaker is the definitive modern day Captain America writer. And for my money, I read this Captain America Brubaker run, and because of that, and I don't usually go out and search down stuff by authors because it's the author.
Yeah.
But because of this, I went back and bought Brubaker's Daredevil run. I bought his Iron Fist run, and I followed his Velvet series with Image, which was also with Epting and a spy espionage story.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just something else he does. What is it? Is it Criminal he does with Sean Phillips? That Image book. You ever read any of that?
I haven't. No.
I got a couple of those too. There's another one. Fatal. That's it.
Okay.
I got some of those. And let me just tell you, everything that man writes is gold. There's nothing I have read of his that I thought, what's this guy doing? Every time you read one of his books, whether it's a character you know or an original property, it's like he's got it. He's dialed into the character. He's dialed in not only to the character and what they're supposed to be like and how they should be written, like what you're talking about with Captain America, which you're spot on in every single way, but even with characters that are brand new, he dialed into the importance of character in a story, and that's the driving point. That's what separates, I think, great stories from, you know, good and okay stories, is being character driven, and he's got the character figured out and what the character would do, and that makes the story go, as opposed to all the other, you know, potential conflicts that he might come in with. It's always driven by character. So, I mean, definitely modern, definitive version. And I don't think you have to put him in there with, I think, any version. I mean, you think of the Captain America stuff from the 60s when he comes out of the water in Avengers 4 and that whole – because really he doesn't get his own series to a little bit down the line in Tales of Suspense, but his story first runs basically in the Avengers.
Yeah.
And that stuff and how it goes into his run and then all that stuff is great. I mean, just thinking back, you know, who really knows who was writing some of those stories? Stanley might have been scripting them, but they're being plotted by somebody else, most likely. And then Roy Thomas gets into it, I think, eventually when he comes on. But even up into the Steranko issues and Captain America, what, like 110, 111, 112, 113, something like that. Man, those things are all on the same par. You know, you read that Brubaker stuff, you go back and you read those Steranko issues, holy cow. And then there's even a good run in the 80s by Mark Gruenwald, who I think is the one writer who has written more Captain America comics than anybody else. And he had a great run in the 80s of a lot of great stuff. It went sideways sometimes with the whole Cap Wolf storyline and such. If you remember hearing about that or reading that. But there's a Just before that, like right around 82, 83, there's a sequence with a Hydra and Viper and all that and the Serpent Society. And he's dating one of the Diamondback, who's like one of the villains, but she turns and all that. And that's kind of weird. But when you put it in context of seeing how he can affect change in another person, that it starts to make sense. And he sees the good in them and sees that – you've just been misled or you made some wrong decisions, but you do have a chance. All that stuff, I think all that fits in right together. And I think, it's just great stuff. And I look at everything right now with Cap as an extension of what happened in Brubaker's stuff. You know, this is almost 20 years. Oh my God, this is almost 20 years old now.
I know.
15 years ago or something. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I think in terms of if you're looking at the last 20 years or so, or 30 years even, I think he's got to be considered the best, hasn't he? Sort of from the 90s onwards, at least. I don't think anyone's done anything in that time period that would compare. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, he lasted on the title for about 8 years or something like that. I read in sort of preparation to this. I mean, that in comic book terms, 8 years is like a lifetime, isn't it? To be on one title, 8 years, that's astounding. You wouldn't wouldn't get that now.
When
they chop and change so much. I mean, you know, 2 or 3 years would be considered an epic run now, but eight years and to be able to tell so many stories and you know, avoid going stale and you know sort of rehashing and going down old familiar roads. I think it just showed, like you said, I mean, the man is a genius writer. I love his stuff. His Batman stuff he did, like Gotham Central, I love those books. And he did the sort of Bruce Wayne Fugitive, Bruce Wayne Murderer series as well, which I really quite liked as well, which I've recently been rereading. So I just think he's a really good, like you said, it's character, isn't it? It's not bombast. I mean, if you want that, you'll get that in some of these books, but it's character first, isn't it?
He knows how to include the bombast and the big stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what really drives the story is the character. That's what's important. And he seems to write knowing that that is what's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he focuses on that and it makes that what drives the story.
Yeah.
And that's what's so good.
One thing that did struck me about this, actually, is obviously, you know, we'll get onto shortly how Bucky becomes a Winter Soldier and that whole story. But it, in some ways, he becomes a Winter Soldier by default, because when you get this sort of story right at the start of this where the Russian submarine sort of hears news that Captain America has sort of, you know, exploded on the drone over the English Channel, and so they're going to go to where the Channel Islands are, which is in the English Channel between England and France, to go and look for Cap's body, aren't they? But they end up with Bucky's instead. It just imagine if they'd actually found Captain America instead of Bucky, and in fact Captain America would have been made into the Winter Soldier, wouldn't he? I mean, I know Marvel have always done these what if stories over the years, but that's got to be imagine that as a what if the Russians had found Steve Rogers and not Bucky, then you never would have got Cap coming out of the ice to join the Avengers in the 60s, but he would have reappeared in the Marvel Universe as the Winter Soldier. I mean, just imagine that.
You've got to write that one up, Max, because that's a great idea.
I can't believe they've not done it.
That's your stepping stone into comics, my friend. You need to write that one up.
It just occurred to me when I was reading it, because they're not going there to look for Bucky, are they? They happen to find him. They're going there because they know Steve Rogers is in that water somewhere. So it would have been just such a great story to tell, you know, as a little mini series or something like that, as what if Steve Rogers had become the Winter Soldier? What a story.
Because in the story itself, they're saying they're trying to get the body so they can reverse engineer the super serum.
Yeah.
The super soldier serum. So you would have essentially not just the Winter Soldier, but a whole, potentially a whole squad of Winter Soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. That is a great, I would read that.
Yeah.
And I would read that. Marvel, if you're listening, I would read that.
Yeah, we all would, I think, because not only would it would have set cap on that trajectory as a Winter Soldier, but because obviously he never would have then come out and joined the Avengers from the ice, you wouldn't have had him affecting all that history of the Marvel Universe as Captain America through all those decades, and all the influence he had on all the key Marvel events, you know, whatever it may be, the Infinity Gauntlet story, the Secret Wars,
everything,
Civil War, anything you care to mention is Captain America, where it's a big Marvel event. Caps, as one of the A-list characters, he's always front and center, isn't he? So he would have been taken out of all those equations. That creates a whole other set of what ifs. So they really could have done a really interesting story based around that.
You could do a whole parallel universe based on that, and then go down the line and review all the, I mean, what if the Avengers, I mean, I don't know if you remember the early Avengers history, but you know, they rescue Cap and he becomes the leader almost immediately.
Yeah.
And then a few issues down the line, the Avengers are Captain America, Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye, and Quicksilver. Captain America and three reformed criminals.
Yeah,
are the basically. Avengers.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what do the Avengers even continue? You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who would have?
Is that the end of the Avengers? Do the Avengers break up at that point because there's no Captain America to lead them and hold them together and continue on with a new crew of, you know, ne'er-do-wells that he's somehow able to hold together.
Yeah,
which is pretty interesting in and of itself, but maybe there's no Avengers. How many times did the Avengers save the world then that they don't save the world?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would have been. It's one of those sort of real tipping point moments. So yeah, there's a story to your mind there. I quite like to see, but nevertheless, obviously that's a story for another day. So obviously the actual history is obviously the Russians find Bucky in the water, missing his left arm, you know, barely alive somehow, and obviously they. As we learn, start to retrain him and, you know, equip him out as the Winter Soldier. And that whole, one of these whole issues basically is dedicated to that backstory, isn't it? I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's probably issue 11, either 11 or 12, I think it is, where they literally, Cap basically is passed the file, which basically takes you through that entire history of from the 1940s up to the present day of what he's been up to. I mean, that is such a great story in itself, isn't it? You know, and Brubaker, again, he gives you so much detail and you really start to empathize with him and all the suffering he's been through and you know, all the trauma, physical and mental, that they've put him through. I mean, and, you know, and how he at times almost tries to break his programming, you know, and, you know, they manage to find him and sort of acclimate him to the Soviet way of thinking. It is a great tale in itself, isn't it?
You know, that was one of the notes I made, was that device of using that file.
Yeah.
Was just a great decision on Brubaker's part for a couple reasons. One, he gets to fill in Bucky's story, which is, as you said, wonderfully written. A ton of information, but at the same time, it's not like, because it's a file that Cap is reading, it doesn't come off like it's an information dump or a bunch of exposition crammed in, or that the series suddenly goes sideways, like it loses its track of, you know what I mean? It's just entered into the story so seamlessly. Like it is perfect, and it does so much of getting Bucky's character set, as well as all the other flashbacks we get in the series. You know, yeah. That's a particular flashback for that, but there are flashbacks throughout all the issues of time between Cap and Bucky in World War II that are so crucial to understanding their relationship, understanding Bucky's character in World War II and what he was like. I think I made a note of this, and I think it fits well here is, you remember when they're talking about giving Cap a sidekick and all, and he says, you know, and so what if he gets his hands a little dirtier than you will, Cap? You know, no one ever needs to know.
Yeah.
You know, and so we learn here, and this is a bit of retconning on Brubaker's part that fits, but I think what's really clever is it sort of leads the reader to believe that maybe there won't be a way back for Bucky because he's already been indoctrinated into a little harsher way of military life as a special ops agent that won't be afraid to kill if he has to and do some of these sort of black ops missions that you can't send Cap on because you're not – Cap – it's World War II. Yeah, Cap kills people in World War II. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
But it's some of the more questionable things that he – he does, that they have Bucky do. And that makes the reader believe that maybe there's no way back. There won't be a way back because his mind is already too far one way.
Yeah.
And that he's susceptible to the Soviet brainwashing and their methods of assassination and stuff because he's already been trained that way once.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really clever, subtle thing that he does that really sort of ties pre-Bucky or World War II Bucky in with Winter Soldier, something about them that is the same.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you left thinking there's a little gray area there in the character's morality, aren't you? And that, you know, it, normally you would read a book like this for the first time and think, well, it's Captain America at the end of the day. When they finally meet, he's going to get through to him and bring him back from the dark side to the light side, for want of a better word. But the way it's structured, you're kind of on the fence about it, aren't you? You do think, you know, maybe he's just too far gone and this will just play out over the years as that ultimate tragedy of, you know, former best friends, now mortal enemies. You know, you just don't necessarily think he's going to come back to the right side, do you?
No, and you wonder if it's going to come down to that moment and Steve is not going to be able to pull the trigger, for lack of a better term, and he gets away, and so essentially Cap would end up letting him get away because he can't, you know, seal a deal, and maybe even stops Sharon or Nick Fury from sealing the deal, even, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just a great job of writing and setting up a gray area that, you know, he gets the character right, as we said, but it sets up a little bit of a gray area to where it leaves the ending unknown until you get the ending.
Yeah.
You can't accurately guess. You, of course, hope and you want things to work out right, but you can't, you know it's going to happen that way until you finally read it. And it's not like it's like an immediate thing either. It's a process. This takes, I think, even by the end, it's not until the next storyline that they actually get everything worked out, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's certainly not, they're not here. They're not on the same page by the end of this particular section that we're looking at for this. It's a really well paced out kind of development for the character rather than him just suddenly all of a sudden renouncing his Soviet brainwashing and training and, you know, saddling up with Cap again. I suppose as well, it was quite interesting because again, you'd certainly know more than me about this, but Bucky's original sort of iteration in the comic books and his World War II character. And you were saying about how Brubaker had maybe retconned his backstory here with, you know, showing that he's willing to do some of these sort of dirtier missions in World War II and, you know, some of these off the books, black ops maybe. If I'm not mistaken, when he was originally depicted, you know, pre all this, back in the original run, that they didn't really give him much of a backstory, that he was literally Cap's sidekick as such, and perhaps they didn't really delve into who he was pre-war as such, or give him too much meat on the bone, so it allowed Brubaker to go in and do all this without sort of incurring a lot of fan backlash, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, the basic story is the same. He is the orphan of a soldier who died, and they just kind of kept him around camp and looked after him and let him be their quote unquote mascot. That's what he's called, I think, in his original appearance. And his first appearance is Captain America Comics number one, just like Captain America. So he's been around for as long as Captain America has. And Captain America in the comics back in the Golden Age didn't have solo stories. It wasn't like Batman and he gets Robin, you know, a year down the road. It was Captain America and Bucky from the very beginning. Yeah. And you know, Bucky walks into the tent and sees Steve Rogers putting on the Captain America costume, and Steve's like, "Uh-oh."
Yeah.
And he kind of doesn't really blackmail him. He just kind of convinces Steve, "You got to let me help you," instead of, you know, not letting me help you.
Yeah.
So they become fast friends, and I think it's in the original appearance in the Golden Age, it's really Bucky's like 12 years old, maybe 13. But here I think Brubaker says he's like 16 or something. So he's closer to being an adult and being able to serve anyways than he was in the Golden Age. So there's a couple tweaks, but it's more of an exploration of what an addition. It explores and adds as opposed to completely changing or destroying what was there in the past. He incorporates that. And there's a couple other things that he does too that throughout the run, this book, that I made note of along those lines. He even references his first meeting with the Cap, references his first meeting with the Falcon.
Yes.
From Captain America 117, how they first met and how he just mentions it that has something to do with the cosmic cube. And if you've ever read Captain America 117, you know, in that story, Captain America is in the Red Skull's body and the Red Skull's brain is in Captain America's body.
Right.
And that's how Cap and Sam Wilson first meet on this island, which is kind of bizarre looking back, like, how is this the first way they meet? Yeah. But it is. But then there's a flashback scene of Cap and Bucky sitting in a pub in Paris or London or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's a few lines about something that Toro says about that says that ah, sorry. There's a few lines that Bucky says that Toro said about Cap.
Right.
And it just brings in that whole notion that all that Marvel history is included, the Invaders and Human Torch and Toro, Submariner, yeah. Captain America and Bucky. It just includes all that just with a couple lines to set it firmly in the Marvel Universe. He didn't have to do that, but he did it on purpose to make sure that you understand how this fits into the broader picture and Cap's overall history. And I thought that was just, you know, that's for someone like me who likes old comics like that, that just put a big smile on my face. And not everyone's going to do that, but he is. He understands how important that is to readers to be able to include those details.
Yeah, it's good. It's like it gives you that connective tissue, doesn't it, to what's come before?
Yeah,
and kind of makes it connect to the canon as well, which is pretty good. You know, it doesn't make it so that he's like pulling things out of thin air. It's like he's still connecting it back to where the character was, even though he's sort of reinventing the character slightly. He's still being a bit faithful to what's come before, hasn't he?
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, a lot of that stuff was stuff that was done with the Invaders. That was all something from the 70s that wasn't in the Golden Age originally. That was something that Roy Thomas came up with in the 70s, which was a great run. If you, you ever want to read that, the Invaders, the original Invaders run by Roy Thomas.
Yeah, I always would like to see that as a live action kind of thing, the Invaders. I think that would have been a great film or a great TV series. You know, it's a shame
we probably
won't get it now, but you know, it would be great to see, you know, if they ever did something
Absolutely.
Like that, a Disney Plus series or something like that, you know, that would be cool. Well, you know, you never know. Nothing's off the table, is it? If they've got the rights to everything, they could always bring something. So, you know, yeah, who knows?
I mean, I would have thought a WandaVision series would have been harder to predict than Vader series, I'll be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just shows that they can do as they want. So hopefully maybe we'll get something like that. I mean, obviously they're talking about bringing Namor in very soon as well. And, you know, allegedly he might appear in Black Panther 2, apparently, remains to be seen. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're talking about him maybe being like the villainous, you know, the villain who becomes the anti-hero in that, during the course of that film kind of thing. So that'll be interesting to see if they do that. But it's be interesting to see how they pull off Namor actually as a live action character. How faithful they are. Do they give him the little wings on his feet and, you know, the Eddie Munster haircut and things like Spock ears. Yeah. the little gold, green swimming trunks and, you know, just walking around like that. Yeah. Interesting to see how they contemporize it for sort of a modern sensibility. But it's going to be a very interesting character to cast that one. See how they do that one.
It's interesting you brought that up because on the Classic Comics episode I did with about the Human Torch and Submariner's battle in the early issues of Marvel Mystery Comics, I go off on a little tangent talking about how great this would be as a movie. And I want to see that. I want to see Namor come in as he was originally with antagonistic feelings towards, you know, the surface world and I just thought that the story in those issues, even though it's 1940 and it's not as developed as, you know, you're going to get from comics today, there's a lot of meat in there that if you read it, there's a lot of interesting things that could be expanded upon with character, especially including the police officer Betty Dean that befriends Namor because she's the only one that sees any redeeming qualities in him. I just think there's so much story potential there, and especially for a movie. I mean, sure, it's a huge, big blockbuster movie, fire versus water, but at the heart of it, you're going to have this great character potential if it's done right. Yeah, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, there's huge potential with Namor. I mean, I know we've already had DC's Aquaman, which was a massive hit, which obviously gave us that sort of underwater world and all the rest of it. But they can do their own version too, so they're not really rehashing what DC have already presented. The way they could put that character on the screen, like you said, make him a villainous character at first, you know, a misunderstood. That's how the character is. He despises the surface world, doesn't he? You know, he's not like Aquaman, who, you know, is could have coexist perfectly with the surface world. He despises the surface world. So it'd be great to see, you know, and then something sort of shows in the light or something like that, or, you know, Sue Storm walks in and he realizes he's in love with her like he normally is. and suddenly decides, oh, I won't drown them all after all, something like that maybe.
Well, you know, it's a great analog for any kind of hate concept out there, whether it's against a particular nationality, race, gender equality thing.
Yeah.
If you can always play it and show that all it takes is meeting someone from the other side and seeing them as a real person, then it changes your perspective on whatever your prejudiced opinions may be. And I think that's what's at the heart of that original comic with Namor and the Human Torch and the police officer Betty Dean. That's what he's, Bill Everett, who wrote it, is addressing, just not as obviously as we would see it in today's world.
Yeah.
But it's there, and it's the perfect. It's almost like, you know, it's being given to Marvel on a silver platter to make that movie and use that as a story which should fit so well with contemporary topics in our world.
Yeah.
And I just want to see it done right so badly. You know, I'm going to be really angry if it's not, because Aquaman was not done right, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I'll get into it if you want to, but I think that he just wrote Aquaman's character wrong, and I'll be honest. I didn't watch the movie because I thought the trailer and his portrayal in the Justice League movie was so not to my liking. I felt I would just be angry if I went and watched that movie. I think they gave us Aqua Bro, you know, slacker surfer dude. Oh, I could pee on it if all I needed was water. You know, Yeah, he's not doing Schwarzenegger one-liners. Yeah. They, I mean, clearly they did not really draw on the established characterization of Aquaman. They used his story, half man, half Atlantean, and tried to do a story about that, but they didn't really make the character right. They didn't get the character right. And so I mean, when he said that in the trailer, I could just pee on it. I was like, well, I'm out. I'm just gonna skip it and not get into it and be disappointed. I could tell. That's a really side story there. Talking about Aquaman and a Captain America show, but
oh well,
that's how my brain goes.
Yeah. Well, we cover it all here, so that's all good by me. No, I quite like the film. I didn't think it was breathtakingly brilliant, but it was a very enjoyable, you know, big screen cinematic romp. You know, the underwater stuff was really well put together, and like you said, the version of the Aquaman character was a little bit different from what we're used to, but it kind of works okay. I think if you get a chance, you should see it just so you can see it really and see where you go with it. But the other, you know, Black Manta was very good in it at least, and his motivation, and it felt really, really sort of true, and you know, you bought why he hated Aquaman so much. So there's certainly more to be mined there with the sequel. We'll see where it goes, I guess. Yeah. But okay, so one thing I do want to talk about before we get right to the end is when Cap and Bucky finally meet. Okay, so we've been building up this whole run of these issues where Cap's sort of in this sort of state of denial and leading up to this face-off finally, and we do get it, and it doesn't disappoint in my opinion anyway. I don't know what yours is, but I think it's a great final confrontation because the fight is hard hitting, you know, it's punches to the face, it's kicks to the face, it's throwing each other into walls, it's brutal stuff. But at the same time, Cap, throughout this fight, Cap's still not given up on the man his friend was. He's saying to him, you know, is there anything left of you in there? Do you know who you are? You know, do you know who I am and all the rest of it? You know, and Bucky's like, yeah, I don't know who you are. You don't know me. And it's this brutal back and forth. It is a great fight scene, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's no holds barred. They're going after each other. I mean, Bucky's trying to shoot him with that high powered rifle. And like you said, there's a great shot of just Captain America kicking Bucky right in the jaw and putting him down, and he's the whole time arguing with him, you know, there's something in there of you. You remember, you know, you remember who I am, you know? And, you know, the Winter Soldier denying it the whole time. And then he finally just sort of opens up and says, okay, go ahead, shoot me. If you don't know me, go ahead and do it. Shoot me. And then, it's like he's gonna, but he misses or something, and
one
of those great shield ricochet shots.
Yeah, you can see there's like when he tells him to shoot him, what they really, really well do is they do sort of three panels, don't they, of Bucky not shooting him, sort of thinking about it. Because, you know, you'd think, you know, this Winter Soldier, this highly trained Soviet assassin, if you've got a shot like he has, you just take it, put one between his eyes, and that's the end of that. But you can see there is something there, isn't he? He's thinking about should I or shouldn't. I mean, he does it. After all that, he actually does pull the trigger, but he kind of misses, doesn't he? And Steve manages to bounce the shield off about four surfaces and get him in the back, which is great. But there's just that chink of daylight there, isn't it? That, you know, he isn't all gone. There is still something of the man in there. And then, of course, we get the MacGuffin that we haven't even mentioned of the whole thing is the cosmic cube, which Cap then uses to unlock all Bucky's repressed and forgotten memories about who he was. And we get, at least visually, I think, the highlight of the whole this double splash page where Bucky is on his knees, holding his head, you know, screaming in pain. And then the entire two pages is all highlights or lowlights maybe from his life story there, all the different things that have shaped him and all the things he's been through. That is a real piece of art, isn't it?
As you were talking about it, I pulled the book out and started following along also. And you are 100% correct. I turned that page and thought, man, what a shot. What a shot. Yeah. And it's perfect. It just says, it's just a wonderful two-page spread of, you know, Epting doing some great stuff with that. Or is that a the flashbacks are by Michael Lark, though. Is that right. Epting or Lark? I don't know.
I don't know, Matt. It's hard to tell, isn't it? Because I think that figure of Bucky at the front of that double page does look like the Epting Bucky that we've seen all through this run.
Yeah.
But like you said, maybe the background isn't him. I don't know. But it, whatever, the combination works beautifully. That is an absolute wonderful. I would have that framed on my wall if I could.
Oh yeah, that's definitely frameable. And yeah, that's something that strikes me about this the entirety of this this book that we're looking at is it doesn't matter if it's Brubaker or I'm sorry, Epting or Michael Lark on the art. It's fantastic no matter what. It's because the flashback pages are just as good as the main story. Oh, and sometimes they're in black and white or with a sort of a brown tone to it. What's that called? Okay. Sepia tone. Tone. Figure that one out in translation at some point. But it's great no matter what it is. The art is just is on par with the writing. And you know, sometimes you don't get that in a comic. You get a great writer and they're paired with the so-so artist, which is okay. I mean, I can deal with that. But then you'll get like a terrible writer with a great artist, and I ain't going to read that. I'm not going to buy a book just for the pictures. No offense to anybody, but I'm not going to buy a book just for pictures. But then you get something like this, and it's firing on all cylinders, story and art, and it's just – it's a high point. It's why it's, you know, a high point of the past 20 years, like you said. It's
Oh, it is. It's right up there. I've often said on this show, I don't want to open a book with brilliant writing and shitty art, and I don't want also to open a book that looks wonderful, a feast for the eyes, but is written poorly. It needs to be, both need to be on top of the game for me. You can't have one without the other. And like you said, this book is everything, isn't it? On those, it couldn't be better written and it couldn't be better drawn out. It is brilliant. I mean, just even if you don't know much about the history, like you said before about how, you know, someone could pick this up who perhaps doesn't know about the history of Captain America and Bucky, just from that double page there, you can kind of just read that and get all you need to understand about the man, can't you? You can see all the key moments of his life. And even if you've just got a very basic working knowledge of who he is or who he was, you can piece it together from this double page, can't you?
Yeah, and so many of those things in the double page are touched on in other parts of the flashbacks.
Yeah.
Because he's working their relationship so that even if you are new to the characters, only have a basic idea, he gives you enough with the flashbacks to piece it together entirely, and then you get that double page splash, and it's like, now here's what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
You've been reading the – now here it is here. Bam.
Yeah.
You know, it's so well done on all counts. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It just gives you that last piece of the jigsaw that you've – like you said, it's been talked about. It's been hinted about. You know, their backstory, and here it is in one lovely double splash page of art. It is just the perfect way to end his last sort of journey back to the man he was by having his memories restored. And that last, you know, that sort of last act after this is that sort of the tragic nature of the character, isn't it? He finally remembers who he is, and he, you know, Cap's there to try and comfort him, and he says, you know, Cap, you should have just killed me, you know? And, you know, that's just the tragic nature of the character, isn't it? All he's been through, all the suffering he's done, all the blood that's on his hands, I guess, from everything he's done over the decades, all the assassination missions he's done for the Soviets.
Exactly. How do you live with that? How does he live with that? Here he is, you know, Cap the whole time has been telling Sam and Sharon and Nick, you know, no, there's a good person inside. The Bucky is still there.
Yeah.
And then when he finally brings him back, it's almost like Bucky saying, I'm not still there. I can't go on. Yeah. Knowing all this has changed me to the point that I cannot go on. I don't want to live with all of that guilt and all that blood on my hands. I mean, it suggests ever so slightly that maybe the decision to save Bucky was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it was.
We don't want to say that. We don't want to think that. Cap doesn't want to think that. But I think because Brubaker is such a great writer, he is suggesting that ever so slightly, just to make the reader think a little bit more about what's happened. And of course, it leaves it open for the next story Brubaker wants to tell. Do we bring him back? We save him all the way? Do we help him work through all these issues? Or there's still a chance he's going to go back the other way? Or is he going to die tragically, like by suicide or something, which is a terrible thought. But it certainly, at that moment, you said you were talking about that double page splash, and just a couple pages later, it's a really great a great scene. But they're facing pages, and the top is Cap and Sharon and the Falcon, and at the bottom you see an establishing shot of Fort Lehigh, and directly opposite that on the other page at the bottom, after some memories Bucky's having, is Bucky just sitting there on the ground at the, you know, deserted Fort Lehigh with his hands, with his head in his hands. And it almost looks like it could be one shot the way it's the way it's designed between the two pages. It's not, but it works so well that it could be one big shot. And you just get all that right there, that he remembers everything now. And not just his life as, you know, Bucky in the camp with Captain America, but everything he went through in World War II and everything he did as the Winter Soldier. It's all come back, and it really leaves it open-ended. What's going to happen? Is he going to – it's just great. It's great writing and great setup for the next story to make you come back. I mean, I would imagine that after reading that, the first time I was like, oh shit. And I ran to the computer and pulled up Amazon so I could order the next volume, just so I could, you know, have it here as soon as possible. Cause I didn't want it to go, you know, go too much longer without finding out what happened. Cause it's got a hold of you so strongly.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It just leaves you on the hook for more, doesn't it? It's, you know, you've been on this journey with him for, you know, everything, you now know everything that's happened to him between his supposed death in World War II to this moment, all the crap he's been through, everything he's had to do, all the despicable acts he's had to carry out for the Soviet Union. And then he's just left this broken man who now is aware of everything he's done, gone back to where it all started for him, like you said, at Fort Lehigh, where he first met Steve and began this whole adventure. He's sort of come full circle, hasn't he? Just there, broken, what's next kind of thing. What a great way to sort of close the circle, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic ending. And the thing is, it's one of those things that, sure, we want to read what happens next. But even if you didn't, you could still end here and still have an ending.
Yeah.
You've still got an ending because you've brought him back. It's just that this is the end of this story. The next story is, has he come out of it or not? That's a separate story. But I think you still have an ending of the story here, which is pretty neat in comics today, the way they, you know, decompress and draw out over so many issues. You still have a story here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just it's, like we've been saying all the way through this, the writing is just – it's top tier for me. It doesn't get much better, you know. And it, despite the sort of the high concepts of it, you know, people being recovered from the sea and frozen and cryogenically frozen for decades and thawed out to carry out these missions. Of course, things like that don't happen in the real world, at least as far as we're aware. you know, and super soldiers and all the rest of it, these things aren't real, but it does feel like a very grounded human piece of drama, this, doesn't it? You know, it's, yes, these are superheroes. Yes, this is the Marvel Universe, but, and that's probably why I think the Winter Soldier film is my favorite Marvel film as well, is because it feels like a real human story, if that makes sense.
The Winter Soldier is my favorite Marvel film also.
Yeah.
And I've said that for years since I first saw it. And my younger daughter likes the first Avenger the most, but I like Winter Soldier the most. I think it's for the exact reasons you say, it's the grounded human story. And to me, that is what makes this comic so good, is that, and what I think all comics should strive for is that grounded human element. I mean, the whole point of comics is you can have the suspension of disbelief for the pseudoscience of the super soldier formula, the cryogenically frozen Bucky, those, the cosmic cube, those things, those are the details that make up the fantasy elements of the story. Yeah. But if you don't have it grounded with real human drama and real human characters, that's where things go sideways. That's where things start to make no sense, you know? Yeah. Just like, it's like Superman. Okay, an alien from another planet with superpowers, you know? We all know that. We accept that. We're not going to go, well, that's dumb. He's an alien. What we're going to say is it's dumb is when things don't feel like real people.
Yeah.
Or the characters don't act consistently, you know, with the characterization. That's where things go sideways. And that's what, like we said all along, what he gets so right is everything about this that matters with character is right on for not just the particular characters, but for what it feels like in real life. I mean, it feels like these are real people having these conversations and going through these emotional turmoils, you know, whether it's, you know, Steve and Sharon fighting, whether it's, you know, Sam coming to Steve as a friend to try to help him through this problem, help him think about it and help him work through it, or if it's, you know, Steve's conflict trying to reach, you know, inside Bucky's, you know, emotions and mind and get him to remember him. And that's what's so good.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think on that note, that is transitioning perfectly into us giving, I think, our final scores on this one, Matt. As always on the show, the guest gets the final word and the guest gets the big finish, which is the way it should always be. So I'll give my score and then we'll get your score. I, out of five, one being a steaming great turd through to five being the greatest thing the greatest thing since sliced bread. Out of five, I have to give it five. I really do. I think for me, it's a really bold reinvention of an old character into a new character. I think, as we've said, Brubaker expertly paces the story, hypes up the myth of the Winter Soldier with all the information he gives you before, giving us everything. You know, the build-up comes to the two characters meeting, the face-off doesn't disappoint. As we've said, Steve Epting's art is an absolute feast for the eyes and so easy to absorb, and I think it's just perfect. It's, you know, it's part superhero story, it's part sort of spy potboiler. It's top tier stuff for me, so I have to give it five. I can't give it any less. What say you?
I wish I could give it a six, pretty much.
Well, you can if you want.
It is honestly one of, in the past 20 years, it is honestly one of my favorite comic storylines I've read. I told you that when I first was reading Captain America 25 and following on, I thought it was the best thing I was reading, period. Yeah. And I'm a DC guy mainly, you know, but being a Captain America fan from a long, long time ago, this was just absolutely perfect for me in every way to keep me reading Captain America, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I only stopped reading Captain America when I thought it went off the rails. I didn't like the Dimension Z storyline by Rick Remender and John Romita Jr.
Oh, yeah.
The first six issues.
Yeah.
And dropped it. And then when they had that whole silly Secret Empire crap, you know, I knew that was going to be terrible from the beginning. I read the first issue standing in the comic shop and said, guess what? I'm going to pass. When they bring Captain America back, I'll come back. So, and I did when they brought him back, when they started the new volume with Tennis. I'm going to say it wrong. Tennessee Coates.
That's the one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When he started in July of 2018, that's when I jumped back on Captain America, because they brought him back and I was done. That's just how it goes with it. But this Brubaker stuff is it's going to be tough to beat. You might be able to come close to matching it in some ways.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be very hard to beat, and it's going to be one of my top favorite comic runs of all time for a very long time, especially in the modern era, you know.
Yeah.
Anything from whatever the modern era is anymore, I don't know. But this is something I've loved since I read it the first time, and I think it holds up, you know, even almost 20 years down the line, 15 years down the line. It's just great stuff. I can't recommend it highly enough. And, you know, five out of five, man. Five out of five.
Oh, yeah.
No question. Easy money. Yeah. Easy money. There's fewer things that are a sure thing than this as being a five out of five.
Oh, yeah. You can take that to the bank. It really is. It's there's nothing I wouldn't change about it. There's no fault I can find in it. It's just a great story that even on repeat reading, you still find, even though you know what's happening and you know what's going to happen, you're still hooked into it. It's that's the strength of the writing from Brubaker. It really is. So I'm glad we're on the same page.
Yeah, it's because those scenes you do reread, they mean so much. There's so much emotion and story in those three things you're rereading that it holds up so well. And that's, like you said, bro, yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page too. That'd have been a pisser if we were on the opposite side.
Yeah, on the show, I've yet to have someone come on, and obviously because I don't pick the books, I've yet to have someone pick one that I haven't liked, which is great. You know, it's that day will come, I'm sure. But as of yet, no one's presented a subject that I've gone read it and gone, oh, that was shit. But one day maybe, but no, it's I'm really glad you chose it. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute treat for me to talk to you about such a great book. It's been a privilege, a pleasure, and everything else you can say. It's been fantastic. So thank you so much. I'm eternally grateful for you for giving up your time and your expertise. You've really made me very happy, and what a great show. If you be so kind, you know, this is your forum. Please let people know where they can find you on the social medias, where they can find your work, what you've got going on. Please, sir, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I had a great time. We have chatted back and forth on messaging platforms about different things, comics sometimes, most of the times music, because we have a lot of that in common too. But yeah, it was great to talk to you. Great to actually – I'm not meeting you face-to-face really because, you know, we're not in the same room. But it was fantastic to have this conversation. So where can you find me? Obviously, I have reviews at dccomicsnews.com if you want to see some of the writing I do. You can also find me at Twitter at MattB_Lloyd. And of course, on the Comics and Motion Network, we have the Classic Comic Show with Matthew B. Lloyd. Comes out every other Monday. And what other thing to say? I forgot already. Isn't that terrible? Oh yeah. And I do have some published work with chapter I co-wrote with a friend in a book on Batman and politics called Politics of Gotham, the Batman Universe and Political Thought. It is available on Amazon. And my friend and I also have a chapter coming out in a upcoming Black Panther book, which is yet to be released. There's some hold up and scheduling issues due to the death of Chadwick Boseman and the status of the second film. They wanted to tie it into the release of that second film, but not sure exactly what's going on with the publishing with that yet. But our chapter is definitely in the book, so eventually that should hit the stands at some point also.
Oh wow, so plenty to look forward to from the Matthew B. Lloyd production line by the sound of it.
Oh yeah, don't forget you get to hear music too on the Classic Comics Show. That's all me, so if you like that aspect also.
But yet another reason to check it out, people. Make sure you do get on there, because you're going to have a good time. If you want to say hi, you can find me on social media at Maxi Byrne, which is spelled at Twitter, I should say, at Maxi Byrne, which is spelled MaxyByrne. If you go there, there's links to the various websites I write reviews and articles for. Check those out. And alternatively, there's a link to the Comics in Motion Twitter page at Comics in Motion P, which then provides you with a link to this network which you're hearing this show on, which obviously, as we've discussed, obviously Matt's show is on there, plus the plethora, the litany of other great shows now that are on there from various people on the Comics in Motion network. Whatever your taste is, whatever you're looking for, I'm sure you'll find something on there to cover that. So by all means, get on there, check it out. Comic books, Star Wars, films, TV, everything and anything in between, there's bound to be something there to your liking, so do check it out. So again, Matt, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real great privilege to finally get to chat with you, and I hope to do it again sometime.
I hope so too. Thank you again.
But my pleasure. Thank you. And thank you to everyone out there who's took the time to listen. Hope everyone's okay and everyone's staying safe and looking after each other in these crazy, crazy times we're living in. And hopefully soon we'll be back to what resembles normal life, and we can all look forward to a better 2021 than we had in 2020. So please take care of yourselves, everyone out there, and stay safe. So thank you. Thanks to everyone, and we'll see you again down the road. Bye for now.
The nights are colder now. Maybe I should cry. close the door. And anyway, the snow has covered all your footsteps, and I can follow you no more. The fire still burns at night. My memories are warm and clear, but everybody knows it's hard to be alone at this time of year. It was only a winter's day, just another winter's day. And why should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? A love that can never be. Oh, it meant a lot to you and me. On a worldwide scale, we're just another winter's tale.